We don't hear much news about Iraq anymore. That does not mean it is a happy and tranquil place. Despite the absence of an American war there, there is still disruption and dislocation, and the Yazidi people are greatly affected by that. We heard about the Yazidis daily for a while when ISIS, the Islamic State group, was driving them out of their homeland in northern Iraq. ISIS is mostly gone, but life has not returned to normal for the Yazidis. The Springs of Hope Foundation works to help Yazidi refugees. Lisa Miara is the founder and president of the USA-based foundation and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Lisa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jeffrey, and good morning.
Good morning. Tell us, if you would, about the birth of Springs of Hope, what you were doing and where when you made the decision to start the foundation.
I don't think I made the decision. I think the decision took me. I actually worked with victims of acts of terrorism in Israel for some 16 years, coming from a very personal story that concerned my eldest son. And 6 years ago, I was invited, by my great surprise, into Iraqi Kurdistan, and I stayed. The Yazidi case took hold of my conscience, and I simply could not let go.
So it really called to you. It wasn't like you just said, "Hey, let's do this." It really, was a situation that presented itself, and you had to deal with it. So what is the basic shell of the work, the overall focus of what goes on at Springs of Hope Foundation?
We have a large campus, Jeffrey, inside one of the largest Yazidi displacement camps, a camp for 20,000 Yazidis who were driven out of Sinjar. And inside that camp, we have been able, with the great help of the government, to build a campus, an educational campus, medical, psychosocial, vocational skills, sewing factory, and sports. And we are working on a daily basis, bringing in over 200 kids, young women, young men who were either trafficked, served as slaves, or were on the front line of ISIS. We bring them in from 15 different camps, and we work with them on literally from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day of the week. And we have an additional 200 IDPs internally displaced, those who are living in the camps. So we are basically providing medical trauma, educational, and vocational skills.
You mentioned briefly some of the educational and vocational skills, the sewing factory and the sports, and looking at the members of the team at the Springs of Hope Foundation, I saw job titles I did not expect, not just other executives, but things like violin teacher and sports coach and play therapist.
Right.
So there's a fair amount you take on here.
We take on... I think it's a learning curve for all of us. No book, no handbook has ever been written on how to deal with young men who fought on the front lines under the command of al-Baghdadi, or a woman who has four children by four different captors of ISIS. This is literally feeling the situation as it grows and as it develops, and as there are almost seasonal changes, and finding what I, as a Jew, would call the holes in the universe and filling them in. So, yes, when kids come to us and say, "Hey, we really want to learn violin," we see it as part of their journey of healing and restoration. And so, yes, we'll jump in and we'll bring violins and we'll search the earth for a violin teacher.
So it sounds like the situation for a lot of the people you're talking about here is that they are not necessarily welcome back in their own communities. Is that most of it, or is it also a situation of they just have no homes to go back to?
Number one, they have no homes to go back to. They have no families to get back to. Just a few minutes ago, before you called in, I got the news from one of our young men who was a frontline fighter, obviously coerced by ISIS when he was taken into captivity. He thought until half an hour ago he was the sole survivor of his entire family, and one of his sisters was discovered in Al-Hol camp, and she crossed the border into Sinjar just literally half an hour ago. Sinjar, northwest Iraq, is their home. They have been taken in by the Kurdish regional government in Iraq, and they've been put into displacement camps. They have no houses, no homes, no jobs, no schools. If I take this girl, Najli, who's come out of ISIS just half an hour ago, after 6.5 years, she probably, her emotions, her memory have been so repressed and so suppressed that she remembers very little of her past. She will have had minus 6.5 years of education. She's not coming back to a family and a support system. She is coming back to one broken brother and a tent. And that's where we have to come into the picture.
You really have to make something of a life for them again.
Yes. And give them the skills and the love and the motivation to disengage from the Daishi, from the philosophy of ISIS that has brainwashed them and force them to be kids that they are not.
We are talking to Lisa Miyara here on the Jefferson Exchange, the founder and president of the Springs of Hope Foundation, which is doing work in the Yazidi camps in the Kurdish region of northern Iraq. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we explore further. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's back up a bit, Lisa, and help us understand why Yazidis were so heavily targeted by ISIS in the first place.
Yes, it's a very relevant question, Jeffrey. Yazidis have been the victim of 73 genocides. They are hated by these wings of Islam because they have always resisted submission. They are not considered to be people of the book, i.e. Jews, Christians, or Muslim. And by many wings of this radical Salafi Islam, they're considered to be devil worshippers. So in this incredibly strategic move through Mosul and into the areas of northwest Sinjar on the 3rd of August 2014, 400 were displaced in the course of 24 hours. And around 11,000-12,000 numbers are still shifting, were taken into immediate captivity, first in northern Iraq, and then when the so-called caliphate expanded across the borders, then into Syria.
So are they seen, oh, you mentioned devil worshippers, all right, so that's an easy write-off of their religious practices. How many of them have been killed? How many driven out as refugees? How many still remain in their homes in Sinjar?
Very few remain in their homes. There are a few that have gone back, but they've gone back to a lack of security. They have gone back to a parcel of land that is contended over both by the Iraqi government in Baghdad and the Kurdish regional government in Erbil, where there is a strong Iranian presence, where there is the presence of Hashd al-Shaabi. So there have those who have gone back. Schools have opened. Businesses have opened in the midst of total destruction and desecration. And there have been those that have returned for lack of safety to the Kurdistan region, preferring a tent over a destroyed village. But until international governance does not come in and take up the Yazidi case, it will only be the ones and the twos or the tens who are able to return to Sinjar.
And why is it because the Yazidis are not a nationality that they don't seem to get much attention from the international community?
The Yazidis are an ethnic religious group. They have no country of their own, true. But there are also other groups that must be mentioned in this conversation. The Christian community has also suffered. The Shabak, the Kakai. There are about 20 minority groups in Iraq, all of whom need attention. Yes, the most dire situation, both in terms, numerical terms, and in terms of the atrocities, the crimes against humanity, the war crimes, have been committed against the Yazidi community.
Is there anything like a reconciliation commission trying to punish war crimes, or is it really just a matter of trying to make sure that there is day-to-day survival taken care of first?
I think we're still in the case of day-to-day survival, Jeff. I know that there are those who are looking for the perpetrators and taking them captured, and I also know that some have recently been released and gone back to their villages in Sinjar, which brings yet another layer of security. But the immediate, even though it's 6.5 years, is day-to-day survival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a Sinjar, as you mentioned, not a hospitable place then. This is not a place that is really ready to take people back.
Not yet, no, mm-hmm. No.
Lisa Miar, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the founder and president of Springs of Hope Foundation, attempting to help Yazidi refugees in northern Iraq and the Kurdistan region. You can join our conversation on the exchange. Your questions, your comments are welcome for Lisa at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So beyond the day-to-day and taking care of the needs and trying to give people occupational and therapeutic means to rebuild their lives, what's the long-term vision? I mean, is there even established where the Yazidi people could end up living?
This is an unknown question. It's still a controversial issue that is being discussed between the two governments, Iraq and Kurdistan. There is no immediate solution. There are those that will say several camps will be closed by the end of 2021. But without infrastructure, there's no way to actually pursue this talk. We have to take, you know, it's like looking at 6 million came out of the Holocaust, or died in the Holocaust. Those that came out, how do you even begin to relate to this horror? This also is a genocide. This is a horror. Kids come to us that are trained in weapons that have beheaded. Girls come to us that have been raped 40 times a day by different soldiers who've laughed at them. Where do you start? You have to start by giving them their childhood back, establishing their personality. It's, for me, even the subject of housing is still, it's still far on the horizon. Let's give these kids a life.
Mm-hmm.
Let's right. give them their name back. Let's give them their inheritance back. Let's give them a chance for education. They're not going to go into a school when there's 6.5 years difference between them and possibly their friends, and most of their friends are gone. So where do you start? You just start with the basics on loving these women and accepting them even when they wear the hijab and they're totally confused as to their identity.
Wow, so
I
can see
the basics and begin to work.
Yeah, I can see why structures are a lot less important than giving structure to their
yes.
lives, giving them humanity
yes.
back before a
yes.
home.
Yes. Yes.
And
I saw one of our kids pick up a paintbrush yesterday, Jeff. The most simple, he drew a bee, and I wept because I've known that kid only carrying guns. And it's taken him a year being with us until he would actually mentally, emotionally lay down his weapons and pick up a paintbrush. And that was the most simple thing that somebody could overlook. But that said to me, I'm ready to reconnect to childhood, to myself, to family, to community, to society. I want something different.
Is there any path for progress? Is there a typical path for progress? Let me put it that way, because you're talking about people who have been, you know, shoved off into some strange situation, not of their own making and certainly not of their own desiring, for something like 6.5 years. I mean, will it take at least that long to repair them?
I think it could take a lifetime to repair. I think one can see incredible progress. And then, of course, there'll be a trigger. I can give you an example. We've seen exceptional progress, connection, desiring education, desiring to be equipped to open a business of some of our frontline, ex-frontline soldiers. Then last month, they had to go to Sinjar to identify bones of potential family members discovered and exhumed and identified from mass graves in Sinjar, and that set them back. That set them emotionally back to kids, little kids that were broken. You're not going to talk to them about let's open a cell phone business for the next month. You've got to repair the wounding and bring closure and then go ahead. So there is no typical pattern. You can have girls that seem to be running ahead in life. And then comes Ramadan, and that is a trigger, and they'll start to fast. They're not Muslim, but they're used to fasting. And by the time they're fasted for that period of Ramadan, they're back praying the Salat 5 times a day. convinced that they're Muslim. How do you deal with that? You can't come against them and tell them, take off the niqab, take off the hijab. You're not Muslim, you're Yazidi, we don't allow it. You've got to find a way to bring them back, to let the compass realign to its natural due north.
How do people help? If they are interested in the work of Springs of Hope Foundation or similar groups, how do they get aid to you? What can they do?
People can go onto our website, which is springsofhope.foundation. Obviously, very sensitive material I do not put out there. Anyone who's of a professional nature and is interested in volunteering can contact me through the Connect form on the website, and we'll take it to our two boards. And of course, obviously, Jeff, nothing happens without finance. So anybody who would like to give from the generosity of their heart through our website would be more than welcome.
Given other circumstances in the region and in the world at large, including climate refugees, do you have a concern that there will just be more and more and more people driven from their homes in the future?
Yes, I do. And personally, I do not think that Daesh has finished. Daesh exists large and well inside the Al-Hol camp. The caliphate there is very, very skillfully managed by women. Of course, many women and wives of captors have been released back into Iraq. There have always been pockets of Iraq. I believe the Middle East is in danger. And as much as I want to see these kids settled, there are certain potential dangers in asylum seekers. So there are great and very grave concerns, yes. And I believe we'll see many more uprooted and displaced, sadly, in the years to come.
All right. So the idea that ISIS or Daesh, as you call it, is through is far from a reality, you're saying?
It's territorial. Its territory has been taken from it, but its philosophy, its activism still exists.
Wow.
I do not believe we have seen the end of it. Whether it is like the chameleon that will reemerge with a different title but the same people. I mean, some of the founders of Daesh of ISIS were Saddam Hussein's henchmen under the Ba'ath regime. Nothing new. Cycles that just, you know, continue and evolve, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. That sigh is well-founded. I appreciate you sharing the story with us. Lisa Miara is the founder and president of the Springs of Hope Foundation, which is working to help, as you heard, Yazidi refugees in northern Iraq. And she got the address was not a mistake there. It is springsofhope.foundation, .foundation, a newer one of the web domain. So springsofhope.foundation to get a hold of Springs of Hope Foundation. Lisa Miara, again, the founder and president of Springs of Hope Foundation. Thank you so much for sharing this story on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey. I appreciate your invitation.
All right. Take care.